on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Thursday, October 24th, 2024. And like many Thursdays, like many days this week, like many weeks this year, there are a lot of things to talk about today. We got macro data, we got earnings data, all things that move the market just a little bit, but enough. And so as we try and dissect all of this information every day, every week, every month, quarter, year, we hope that here at Invest Talk, we help make you better and more educated investors to take in all that information, to weed out what is noise, and really find those signals that can help you reach your financial goals. In order to accomplish that, we talk about a mixture of educational items, actionable items that can help you in specific situations. Yesterday, we talked about what happens when you finally pay off that mortgage. We have more information for you today. But most importantly, we love to hear directly from you with your finance investment questions via voicemail on our YouTube channel, on our iTunes page, or anytime throughout the next hour at 888-99-CHART. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and some of those earnings, some of that earnings news and some of that macro data. We'll also run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hey, Luke and Justin. Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about Enphase Energy. Ticker ENPH seems to be at a multi-year low, and wanted to get your thoughts if it would be a good time to maybe pick this up and for a long-term hold. It's a possible trade. Just wanted to hear your opinion. Thanks for what you guys do.
So Enphase Energy, that is ticker ENPH, develops and manufactures solar energy systems, including battery storage, EV chargers, microconverters, and they recently had an earnings announcement on the 22nd of October, and it wasn't great. I think the stock fell maybe 15, 16%, or at least early in the mornings. I'm not sure where it closed down, but either way, it was above 90. Now it's trading about 81. It was up on a little bit of a bounce today, up 3.35%. And so we talked yesterday, someone called in about, well, why are there these huge reactions towards missing or beating earnings? And what I pointed out was that, well, yeah, we care about the past, but mostly a stock's price is about the future. And so when they did earnings, they missed, and certainly that was negative for them, but also their projections for Q4 were not great. It was a pretty cautious guidance, highlighting a lot of ongoing macro headwinds. I think one of the good things about Enphase is, unlike a lot of solar companies, they, in 2020, moved their production from China to Mexico, right? They friendshored it in a way that means they wouldn't be as affected by supply chain issues, but also they wouldn't be as affected by these targeted tariffs we've had on the Chinese solar industry. And so let's take a look at this company. Revenue is projected to be about half of what it was last year. Net income is projected to be about a quarter of what it was last year. Net margin is going to drop from 19.2% to 7.9%. They're about a $10 billion market cap company now. They don't have very much debt. Even with that precipitous fall off, even with that quick fall off on the wake of earnings, still about 11% short interest out there. And so I tend to be of the opinion, generally, that when a company is very cautious about their next quarter revenue, about the next 6 months, about the next year, believe them. Even keeping that in mind, they're still trading at 21 times forward-looking earnings, still trading at 11 times their book value, which certainly is in the low end of their five-year range. You can see that here. But either way, I think this is a company that has been overvalued for some time. I think there are a lot of headwinds. None the least could be that there's a essential coin flip election coming up in a couple of weeks. And, you know, the likelihood of a Trump administration would be to maybe reduce some of the subsidies that has helped some solar companies, less of an emphasis on green technology. And so with the uncertainty politically, that also is a reason why maybe I would hold off on Enphase. But overall, I tend to say when a company is really downbeat on their forward-looking guidance, believe them. Thanks for the call. And we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's some of what we have planned, time permitting. My main focus point concerns the story behind this headline. U.S. set to restrict AI investments in China. The United States is preparing to implement new rules that will limit American investment in artificial intelligence technologies in China. The motivation for this is to address national security concerns and maintain a competitive edge in AI development for the United States. Also, we'll touch on new labor market data. The labor market is certainly softening and jobs are becoming more scarce. What does that mean looking ahead into 2025? We'll also touch on something that's been on the mind of a lot of investors, and that is, well, times are good. The market is at all-time highs. Surely there must be a crash on the horizon. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about why, frankly, if you're young, you should be rooting for one. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about the story that I wanted to discuss yesterday, which is that investors are really interested in emerging market funds, but very, very interested in them if China's not involved. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on BKE, Buckle Inc., and one on OGN, Organon and Company, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. But most importantly, we want to hear from you live anytime throughout the next hour at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important. But so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls. Let's
go. If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
Looks like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk about the market today. U.S. stocks were mostly up. The S&P posted its first gain in four sessions and snapped its first three-day losing streak since early September. The Dow down 33 basis points, S&P 500 up 22 basis points, the NASDAQ up 76, and the Russell 2000 up 23 basis points. Outperformers included shipping and logistics companies, home builders, managed care, software companies. Underperformers included rails, chemicals, pharma, beverages, rideshare, precious metals, utilities. The dollar index down 40 basis points. Gold finished up 70 basis points. Crude oil ended up down 80 basis points after reversing some earlier strength in the day. And all of this was because earnings dominated the headlines, with takeaways mixed and more talk about a higher bar following a recent run-up. The rate reprieve was another area of focus today, though deficit concerns continue to get some recent weather-related noise. Continuing claims, however, were above forecasts and near three-year highs. October U.S. services and manufacturing PMIs a bit better than the consensus estimated. Back, they had the largest monthly rise in new service sector business since April 2022, while manufacturing output fell for a third consecutive month. New home sales printed notably stronger than forecast, rising 4.1% month over month after a contraction in August, which was revised lower. Cleveland Fed's Hammock delivered opening remarks at an inflation conference, observing that inflation has eased notably but hasn't yet returned to the Fed's 2% range and still instilling some confidence on the inflation front. Looking forward to PCE and manufacturing data next week as we round out the month of October. As we like to mention, as we need to mention, as we hope you've realized, our podcast and radio show is also available in video form on our InvestTalk YouTube channel. Just head over to InvestTalk and search InvestTalk with two T's. And while you're over there, if you're interested in leaving us a question, feel free to check out the comment section. And when you leave it there, we like to get to that as soon as we can. And so this question came in from Jim Leahy. It says, I'm interested to get your thoughts on RPM. And so RPM is RPM International Inc. It is a manufacturing company. It manufactures and sells coatings, sealants, building materials, and services related to those businesses. Take a look at how big it is. Well, it is a $17 billion market cap company, $16.7 billion market cap company. It's got modest levels of debt, about $2.3 billion. They've been paying down their debt pretty consistently since 2021 when they had $3 billion in debt. And cash flows seem to bottom out in 2022, rising pretty handily since then, heading into the end of this year. Profitability on the right track, certainly. Net margins have increased from 4.8% back in May of 2019, projected to be about 9.6% this year. Let's look at their revenue growth. Well, 5.7% is the annualized revenue growth over the past 5 years, but it looks to me like over the past 3 years, there hasn't been much of a budge there. May 23, $7.2 billion in revenue. May 24, $7.3 billion, projected to be $7.4 billion as of next year. In terms of the relative valuation, they're trading at 22.5 times forward-looking earnings, slightly above their average, though definitely on the upper band of where they've been the past 5 years, trading at 6.3 price to book. Kind of expensive, in my opinion, for a manufacturing company. I think one of the things that this company has going for it is probably international economic normalization and growth within construction headed into next year, right? There's been a lot of talk on both sides of the political spectrum about the housing shortage in this country, the housing shortage that will necessitate maybe not just lower financing costs, but also building new homes. And so ceilings, coatings, that's all a big part of that. Their construction products, about 37% of their business. Performance coatings, 20%, 34% from their consumer side. You know, looking at this, I am certainly worried about their lack of revenue growth. And it is early in fiscal year 25 for them, right? Fiscal year ends in May, but they're on track to only grow about $70 million in terms of revenue. And that's not too stellar. Their net income is projected to rise by about $200 million. So that's certainly making their business more efficient over time. I think that what I would worry about is their consumer segment being such a large part of their business, about 34%. That's a massive part of their business. And so the spike you saw during the pandemic, right, in 2021, 2022, was a lot of people dealing with improving homes, home restoration, upgrading their own homes, and a lot of that has tapered off a little bit. So I think the bottom line here is from a balance sheet perspective, this company looks fine. I think there are some tailwinds that can help them out heading into next year, but it still looks a little expensive to me. It's up 42% over the past year, up 18% year to date. I think for now, I'd keep it on my watch list, wait until it comes down a bit. Thanks for the comment. Well, we're going to move into another break. Still to come in this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. So stay with me. Back, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend? Something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Maybe by now you've heard about this. Maybe you've heard this story. Maybe not. But either way, the U.S. is set to restrict AI investments in China. And in order to accomplish that, the government is nearing the release of new regulations that will restrict certain investments in artificial intelligence, but also other sensitive technologies in China. These measures are part of an executive order signed by President Joe Biden in August 2023, which aimed to curb investments that could enhance China's military capabilities. The rules, currently under final review by the Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, are expected to be published within the next week or so. Some experts predicting they will be issued ahead of the U.S. presidential election on November 5th, though most people believe we're still about a month away. Now, the new regulations are designed to limit outbound U.S. investment in AI, semiconductors, microelectronics, and quantum computing, and will also require American investors to notify the Treasury Department about certain transactions involving these technologies. Laura Black, former Treasury official, noted that the rules are likely to provide a 30-day window before they take effect, which would give investors time to assess their compliance, the obligations of their compliance. In June, the Treasury Department published a draft of these rules with various exceptions, and whenever they do that, they also offer the public an opportunity to submit feedback. The draft regulations decided that they would place responsibility on U.S. individuals and companies to determine which investments would be restricted. Among the proposed measures were bans on specific AI systems based on their use cases or based on their computational power, or at least at minimum notification requirements for transactions related to AI developments and semiconductors that are not outright prohibited. It's important to note there are several exceptions. Investments in publicly traded securities. So for those of you that own index funds or mutual funds, along with certain limited partnerships and syndicated debt financings, were excluded from the restrictions. While the Treasury Department has not commented on the timing of the final rules, the approaching election adds some sort of pressure for the administration to finalize these regulations soon. The move aligns with broader U.S. efforts and European efforts to curtail China's access to advanced technologies, particularly in light of escalating geopolitical tensions. Once implemented, the regulation could have significant implications for American investors, forcing them to navigate a more restrictive environment when engaging in the Chinese market. Let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank and play another caller question. This came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Kevin from Southern California. Thanks for always putting on a great show. I'm calling about Buckle. The stock is Buckle, B-K-E. You've talked about it a few times on the show in the past, and I've been holding it for a while. I bought it in the low 30s, around 42, trying to see what your long-term outlook is for this company. I've been using it to sell some covered calls on and been giving me a decent income. Every now and then I get some shares called away, but I'm just wondering if long-term it's still a good hold or if you feel like maybe I should use this capital in another part of the market. Look forward to hearing your thoughts on the show. Thanks.
So let's take a look at Buckle. That is ticker BKE. And they sell apparel, accessories, footwear. They're split up into four different business segments, really three core business segments. top clothes, so like think sweaters, sweatshirts, denim, and their accessories. Now, it's a $2.1 billion market cap company, and it has had quite a bit of issue in terms of its revenue growth in the last 3 years. Its revenue has actually fallen from $1.3 billion back in 2023 down to $1.2 billion last year, projected to fall again to $1.1 billion headed into next year. And so, generally speaking, from a balance sheet perspective, the company looks fine. Let me pull something up on my other screen here real quick. Sometimes it takes a while for things to load over here. Yeah, so from a balance sheet perspective, it looks fine, right? It's got $328 million in debt on about a $2.1 billion market cap. Dividend yield is about 3.2%. And that's pretty much where it's been over the past 4 years, 3.7, 2.1, all ranging in the same area. Now, its margins have, in this time, still improved, right? 5 years ago, it was about 10.8%, now projected to be about 15% this year. What about its relative valuation? Well, it's trading about where its range is, forward-looking price earnings, about 11 times over the past 5 years. It's been at about 10 times. And so what I would say about this company, we actually own it for our clients in one of our strategies, is it seems to be a company that fundamentally is doing well, but maybe, or rather it is secure on its balance sheet perspective, but maybe suffering from some secular headwinds. So for now, we're holding on to it for our clients. Maybe if you're in a better spot, you can think to trim it down. I think there are other areas of the market where they're, at least in the short to medium term, there can be more success. But for now, we are still holding on to this name. On the next Invest Talk, we will cover this topic, how to set up an effective allowance system for your children. An allowance can help children learn about saving, spending, and budgeting in order to build essential money management skills. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, Paul from Michigan. I was calling about the iShares Gold Trust Micro. I was looking at IAU, but IAUM also caught my eye. The expense ratio looks to be significantly lower, and I believe it's basically the same ETF run by the same company, but for some reason they're offering it at a lower expense ratio. So if you could give me your take on this, I'd appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, so ticker IAU is the iShares Gold Trust, and ticker IAUM is the iShares Gold Trust Micro ETF. We can keep this one short and sweet. IAU has been around for a while. It's used by institutional investors. It has very high liquidity. And back in 2021, as there was more of an interest in gold ETFs, iShares launched IAUM, which is a micro version and is a little bit cheaper. IAU's expense ratio is about 25 basis points. The expense ratio for IAUM is about 10 basis points. And so what you're giving up is a little bit of liquidity. IAU, a lot larger, what, 30 or so billion under management, IAUM, 1 billion under management. It's getting far more popular. But I would say the difference here is that one is really marketed to institutions who need that liquidity level, right? Who need to exit large positions quickly or may need to exit large positions quickly. IAUM, it's more suited for retail investors. And because of that, it is cheaper. So in terms of, actually, it's cheaper not only in terms of its expense ratio, but when they launched IAUM, they made it cheaper in terms of per share net asset value as well. So it's more approachable for retail investors. So as you sound like a retail investor, I would generally advise that if you don't need large size trade liquidity, IAUM is probably where you want to be. As I mentioned at the top of the show, new weekly jobless claims came in and they fell by 15,000 to 227,000 for the week ending October 19th. That's all according to the data released by the Labor Department. This drop was somewhat unexpected and reflects some stabilization after recent spike driven by a lot of things, but mostly by, and I mentioned it before, short-term changes due to weather patterns, hurricanes. In spite of that, continuing claims, a measure that tracks the number of people still receiving unemployment benefits, rose by 28,000 to 1.897 million, which is also the highest level since November of 2021. Now, despite the temporary slowdown for layoffs from the recent hurricanes, from strikes, Boeing's worker strike specifically, economists still are seeing signs that the labor market is softening. The Fed's Beige Book report noted that employment in early October grew only slightly, with more employers focusing more on replacing workers rather than expanding their workforce. This rise in continuing claims suggests that those who lost jobs are finding it harder to re-enter the job market, and so that's reflecting a gradual cooling in labor demand, which in turn should have an effect on wage inflation. Striking workers are classified as unemployed, that's important to note, but only if they're unpaid during the survey period that determines monthly payroll figures. Estimates suggest that these disruptions from strikes, from hurricanes, alongside the lingering impact of other issues, could cut up to 40,000 jobs from October's non-farm payroll report. Economists currently expect payroll gains to come in between 100 and 125,000 for the month, but still significantly below what we saw in September, that massive gangbusters 254,000 increase. Meanwhile, the Fed's recent 50 basis point rate cut, which reduced borrowing costs to a range of 4.75 to 5%, may offer some economic support. But still, continuing jobless claims are indicating that the labor market is weakening a little bit faster than initially anticipated. And so this rise in unemployment could impact the Fed's next steps, particularly with another 25 basis point rate cut anticipated at the next policy meeting and many more rate cuts to come over the next 6 months and through 2025. Dip back into the InvestTalk Voice Bank and look at this question that came in from BlackBerry7. It says, "Hi, Justin and Luke. What are your thoughts on ABX Barrick Gold?" So ABX Barrick Gold is a miner, and they are a very large miner, about $50 billion market cap. And as you'd expect, with gold having a heck of a run this year, they've done pretty well as well, up about 18% year to date. Though it's important to note, right? Not all of their business is gold. They're also exposed to copper and other materials, other metals. And we've talked all the time about why one might want to invest in miners versus the underlying commodity, right? The underlying commodity is going to be volatile. Miners are businesses that can turn off production, smooth out expenses. And so you generally have a smoother ride over the life of the investment versus what you'd have in the underlying commodity. Taking a look at growth, well, over the past 5 years, revenue is up about 10% on an annualized basis from $14.3 billion 2 years ago, projected to be $18.3 billion at the end of this year. For them, that is in December. In terms of debt, they only have about $4.7 billion in debt. Cash flow looks great. Profitability is improving. They don't have much short interest. They pay a solid dividend, about 1.9%. And that dividend per share has increased every year going back to 2018 from 21 cents per share, projected to be 55 cents per share this year. Q2 results looked pretty good. There was actually 146% increase in free cash flow, which is astounding. And looking at their margins too, I mean, their net margin is supposed to grow from 11% last year to about 16.5% this year. Their gross margins are grown as well. Their EBITDA margin up from 43 to 50%. Yeah, I think that given the dynamics that we actually talked about yesterday and things that are driving gold, things that are driving the primary commodity that this company is mining, those things are only likely to continue to be the case going into the near term. And so for us, I definitely do like Barrick Gold. It's trading at a pretty attractive valuation too. It's only trading 11 times forward-looking earnings. Only trading at 1.6 times its book value, 8 times its cash flow. So It's had a good year. I think it will continue to do well. So that is a thumbs up for Barrick Gold. Let's play another question now that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. First off, great show. I try to catch you all the time. I was hoping you could look over the fundamentals of this company. The ticker is OGN, Oscar George Nancy. The technicals are ugly as sin, but I was curious the fundamentals. Anyways, thanks for all you do and keep up the great work. Bye.
Sorry, I was laughing at that. So Organon is a healthcare company, focuses on improving women's health and providing medicines and devices for various conditions. That is Organon and Co, ticker OGN. And it is a small cap company, though, on the upper end of that, about $4.6 billion. Year to date, it's up 19%, but over the past year, it's only up about 9%. Revenue does not look good. It looks like it has fallen over the past 5 years. The sales number is negative in terms of its five-year annualized growth rate. That is something that we do not like to see. Net margins have also fallen from a peak of 33% back in 2019, projected to be about 17% this year. And keeping with the theme, cash flow is falling as well. Now, it is a $4 billion company. It's got $8.6 billion in debt. You know, honestly, what I'm seeing here is a company that's got a lot of debt, a lot of short interest. They pay a very high dividend because their price has fallen a lot. And on top of all of that, they're making less money than they used to with less cash flow and have been issuing more shares. So I think we can keep this one short and sweet and say a thumbs down on Organon. That is OGN that came in today. Thanks for leaving us a voicemail. This is InvestTalk. Now with more than 59 million downloads, thanks to you, your friends, and your family. So hang on, our work continues in 30 seconds.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
I have a question. I recently sold some covered calls, and now the price of the stock is over my strike price. I was wondering if you recommend if I just wait until the shares get called away or sell the option and lose out on the intrinsic value of the option. I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, in this situation, you got a bunch of options. One is you could wait until they get called away, which you mentioned. Another is you could buy back the call option, close out the position. Maybe you think the stock price is actually going to go up a little bit, and then in that case, you would want to buy it back. You could roll the option to a later date. Maybe you want to earn more premium and wait longer. Or you could, say, sell the option, in which case you might lose out on the premium as well. So there are a bunch of options there. I think it depends on your horizon here, right? So if you just want to cut it now, not risk losing any more money, I think it's perfectly fine to buy out the trade. It depends, right? It's not a simple answer because I would need to know what security it is, what the volatility looks like, what the likelihood that it dips back below your strike price. Generally speaking, if it's above your strike price, I would probably just wait it out a little bit, see what happens. It could certainly come below your strike price as well without somebody exercising. Thanks for the call. As we all know, the stock market is enjoying one of its best runs, certainly in recent history. Since last October's low point, the S&P 500 has surged by over 40%, with stock indices in Europe, Japan, and Canada also seeing some pretty strong gains. The fears from last year, mainly that the persistent inflation would prevent central banks from cutting rates, it's largely faded, right? We've already begun the rate cutting cycle, and the economy seems to be more resilient than a lot of people anticipated. And while that's been happening, we've also seen record corporate profits. And so all of this has moved stocks higher. But as usual, as tends to happen, when things are looking good, that's when people start to get a little bit weary of what is on the horizon. And so investors are now wondering whether the good times are already behind us. And there's some reason to believe that. American stocks are relatively expensive, at least historically speaking. And the market is pretty heavily concentrated in just a handful of companies. Rising bond yields, spurred by government borrowing and concerns about the presidential election, are also adding to the anxiety. Let's add on a little bit more. Volatility is on the rise. Look at the price of gold, which is often a hedge against uncertainty. It's been rallying for a while. Despite all this, I would think, I want to reframe your mind here, right? Here's an anecdote. My friends call me all the time and they talk about how happy they are about how the market's doing. And I actually tell them, well, we're young. You should actually kind of want the opposite. So let's get into it. Well, research shows that stocks behave more like bonds than many people realize. When prices fall, expected returns increase. It's analogous to bonds because if interest rates rise, bond yields increase, value of older bonds with lower interest payments drops. And so bondholders, right, we tell you that one of the benefits of holding bonds versus holding bond funds is that you don't have to sell it at a loss, right? You can hold on to it and you will still receive all the promised payments and the principal. In stocks, it's kind of a similar concept. There's no fixed repayment, yes, but historically over time, equity markets have appreciated. And so the lesson there is not that stocks and bonds are the same thing. That's not the lesson I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is that if you can hold for longer periods of time, you should welcome market corrections, right? If you liked the old adage that Warren Buffett used to say is if you like this company at $10, you should really like it at $7. When stock valuations are high, like they are now, future returns tend to be lower, right? Goldman Sachs did a recent analysis. They forecasted the S&P 500 will deliver about 3% annual returns over the next decade, far below the historical average of 11%. Why? Because valuations are higher. Now, does that mean that that is what valuations will be? No, that's based upon analysis that takes into consideration certain things that don't necessarily include secular drivers that pop up down the road. If a market crash occurs, it could reset stock prices, improving the prospect for younger investors looking to build long-term wealth. You want the market to correct when you're younger, when you can invest. You want the market to be at all-time highs when you have to draw down on that. So the takeaway for anyone investing with a long horizon is that market downturns might not be as scary as they seem. Investing isn't like flipping a coin where every outcome is random. Instead, market drops make future gains more likely. It's not easy to see the bright side when prices are plunging, but those who stay the course, those who are in it for the long term, and even buy more at the bottom, they find themselves well rewarded in the long run. So while it's tempting to worry about every dip and every correction, any seasoned investor will tell you that the long game is where it really matters, and sometimes the best opportunities come when things seem the most scary. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART. Farouk in the Bay Area, hang on, you will be next.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Farouk, thank you for waiting. You have a question about TLT?
Yes, thank you very much, Luke, for taking my call. Very knowledgeable and informative program. Thanks a lot. My question about TLT is to hold it for the short term because it came down from $100 to around $93 for a little bit. But the question is, the TLT also was showing like 3.65 yield. How does that work if I'm just in there for a month or something like that? If you can explain that, and my strategy would be to buy it for a short period of time, and then the interest rates come down a little bit, and I have a better opportunity to get into the market, I can sell this and jump into the market with those funds. So that's what I was thinking. Whether that's logical or not, if you can guide me, please. Thank you.
Of course. Well, so for any fund, when you see this yield, that's an annualized yield figure, right? Based upon what payments are being paid out to investors. Now, if you own a fund over a time frame where it doesn't pay out that coupon payment, the price is going to reflect what is the accrued yield. And so when it does pay out that coupon payment, that means the net asset value of the fund is lower. The price will react accordingly, right? So even if you're not there for when a quarterly dividend comes out for a fund, you're still getting exposed to that quarterly dividend. Now, with that being said, you know, I think what we've seen is even though rates have come down, right, over the past year, TLT's up 13.6%. Month to date, it's down 5. 1 month, it's down 6.39. I think what we've seen is a hesitancy to say that in the short to medium term, we are going to cut rates as much as the market thought they would, right? So that's why what you saw, even though rates started to come down, is, well, the 10-year started to creep back up, 20 started to creep back up, mortgage rates are creeping back up. And so I think my concern for you is that unless there's some real movement in the bond market, which maybe there won't be, because what's driving rates higher on the longer end of the curve? Well, the fact that the market's not, or that the economy's not deteriorating, yes, but also there's a lot of potential government spending on the horizon, and the bond market is taking that into consideration. So my primary concern for you in terms of holding this is that over that short term, you could still see some downward movement of this. Just because it was up at 100 and it's dipped back down doesn't mean it's going to go back up at 100, right? The bond market is generally very good at pricing in new information. And I just don't see much on the horizon in the next couple months to suggest that bonds would move in a way that would be advantageous for TLT, at least in the short term. Does that all make sense?
Thank you very much. Yes, it makes sense. Thanks.
Awesome. Have a wonderful day. Now, before we head off, talk a little bit about these new EM funds. And that's because investors are shifting away from China in their EM strategies, even as Chinese stocks show signs of recovery. Rising number of investment firms are offering ex-China funds, creating portfolios that focus on markets like India and Taiwan, while sidelining China. The trend reflects, I would say, growing concern amongst a lot of investors that, sure, there's a lot of political uncertainty, but China's sheer size and volatility is having a large effect on these funds. Before the pandemic, China was about 40% of an EM core fund. And now it's only about 25%, but that's still a significant weighting. For many investors, this exposure, this 25%, is still too large, and it poses the risk of overshadowing smaller, more promising markets or entangling portfolios and tensions between China and the West. Even with recent stimulus measures from Beijing, which sparked a rally in Chinese stocks, investors still remain cautious, right? They view the Chinese market as dependent on the government actions and prone to sudden volatility. Beyond these market dynamics, there's also geopolitical risks that loom large. Sanctions on Chinese companies are a growing concern, especially after the financial fallout from Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, which saw Western governments really force the collapse of Russian markets. And so all these geopolitical tensions has prompted U.S. pension funds and state governments to divest from China. Missouri and Florida have enacted laws to cut Chinese holdings from their investment portfolios, citing these national security concerns. And so the lesson here is anytime people have a demand for a new type of product, Wall Street will answer. This is InvestTalk. And I thank you for joining me today for this podcast and radio show. And I encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please be sure to leave us a rate and review. Remember, We can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. Just go over to investdoc.com and click the portfolio review button. This is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestDoc. Good night.
InvestDoc is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.